Welcome to Tabletop Dropouts. I'm George.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Mike.
Hey there, it's Mike from Tabletop Dropouts. Today I'm going to be interviewing Mike Hutchison of Planet Smasher Games. He publishes most of his games through Osprey and his site, planetsmashergames.com. The interview is going to be mostly pertaining to his new game that's coming out February 18th called Billion Suns, which I wanted to sit down and talk with him about before it came out. I think you're really going to like this interview, and it's going to start right now.
Again, to take part in an interview, thank you, Mike, for your time, and how's it going?
Hello there. Yeah, pretty good.
Awesome. So we have talked a little bit over the break with the holidays. I hope you had some safe holidays, too. And we kind of saw that you have a new game coming out, and we kind of wanted to bring you on to talk about it, and, you know, you wanted to give us a few words, and I'm pretty excited. It's a project that I'm very excited about learning more. So, you know, for the listeners, go ahead and drop the big bomb, man. Like,
sure,
pretty exciting. Actually, like, I know a lot of people that are looking for something like this. So I think
I'm really excited for it to come out, man, because this guy here was supposed to come out in basically a year ago, just before lockdown in the UK. It was supposed to come out in February 2020, but for technical reasons to do with the production, it ended up getting delayed until the summer, and then it got delayed again. And so I'm actually really excited. It's been a long time cooking, and I'm really looking forward for people to get stuck into what is actually now, I guess, technically my third game, seeing as we talked about Mystic Skies last time, but this was supposed to be my big second album, the difficult second album. So the game is called A Billion Suns, and it's coming out from Osprey War Games. It's a blue book, just like the original Gaslands was. So slim little volume, not too much outlay to get a copy of the rules, and very very much intended to play with whatever models you want to. Doesn't come with a miniature line. So A Billion Suns, interstellar fleet battle. So this is a spaceship game. It's a tabletop, yes, war game of spaceship combat,
which we are all very excited about, because we had just spoken with you about how we were trying to get into Battlefleet Gothic, and now we have another space battle game to play too, so it's very exciting. So what might a player who's currently playing, you know, Star Wars Armada or something? I mean, I'm having a hard time even like thinking about games right now that are kind of supported. I mean, Armada seems to be the only one that really comes to mind.
That's the one that's got the most, like, yeah, the most commercial support at the moment is Star Wars Armada from FFG. Although, interestingly, I don't know what's happening with FFG since there's been a bit of movement around the studio there since they got bought by Asmodee. So who knows? Maybe it's not going to be around for that much longer. But I actually think Firestorm Armada might be making a comeback. I read something about that recently, and there's a lot of people in the community still playing some of the like longer term sort of supported by independent miniature companies, things like Full Thrust and stuff. The other one, I don't know why I'm just advertising a bunch of other spaceship games, but these are all great and totally different, and you should play them as well. The other big one is Drop Fleet Commander, for which the miniatures, although a little pricey, are freaking gorgeous.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that. So I was looking at some of them, and they do look really cool. But, you know, it's like I said, yours is a little bit different. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the differences that you have, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it today. Because it's like, you know,
yeah,
some of the games are fun. And, you know, I've played some Armada before and a little bit of X-Wing. But this looks to be something a little bit more vast, let's just say, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, so the intention, I guess, with A Billion Suns is that it doesn't replace Battlefleet Gothic or Star Wars Armada or any other kind of big spaceship fleet battle where the spaceships kind of move like they're a armada of naval vessels, but they just happen to be in the wilds of space. With A Billion Suns, I'm trying to do something different, and the whole premise of the game was like, can I cram a bunch of really science fictiony things in to the game that you couldn't do You couldn't do it if the game was just a naval battle on a real world sea, and it does a bunch of surprising and exciting science fictiony things, and that's kind of the heart of the design. There's a really like clear visual image that kind of guided the design more really strongly at the early stages, which is there's a bit in Star Wars Rogue One where they're about to like flee from, I can't remember the exact scene, they're fleeing from a planet in a bunch of rebel spaceships and corvettes and whatnot, and just as they're trying to escape, the this massive Star Destroyer like just warps in, appears from hyperspace right in the middle of the pile of ships, and like a bunch of the corvettes just like smash into the Star Destroyer like bugs on a windshield, and it's so rad. And it's like that's the kind of like cinematic moment that I feel is exciting about the kind of chaotic space battles that you have in like the movie of Starship Troopers and so on, where you've just got like oodles of stuff in three-dimensional space all on top of each other, and it's mad. So the question was, how do you make all of that goodness happen in a tabletop game where, you know, rather than just having the sort of line them up in two deployment zones and poodle towards each other sort of with your lumbering capital ship movement. So it doesn't do any of that.
I mean, I think that's really interesting. And like, how, so, you know, without going too much into it, because it's not a released game yet, but like, how do you plan to really, like, how did you kind of accomplish that? What kind of like mechanics are you implementing in this game that are kind of bringing out some different gameplay than just a naval fleet battle? Like, you know, you said that you were kind of trying to move away from that a little bit. So what were some of the things that you did that were kind of different to kind of make it that way?
Yeah. So one of the things that you'll see right away as you sort of as you read through the rules and try and figure out how this slightly bananas game work, is that during setup, there's no deployment phase. So what happens is the first turn begins, as each turn in A Billion Suns does, with a jump phase. It actually starts with a command phase where you choose your commands, but we can come to that later. Very early on in the turn, you'll find the jump phase. And the jump phase is basically where you do a couple things. You put jump points down, which are essentially your kind of spawn points that you can then jump ships in, like within a certain radius of that jump point. And the second thing is that you can actually jump battle groups in as well. So deployment starts at the beginning of the first turn, but you can also deploy things in the subsequent turns. So that like visual image of Star Destroyer appears from nowhere right in the heart of the enemy fleet and smashes through things is totally achievable because there are no deployment zones. You just, you know, if you've got the initiative, you might ask me to go first in the jump step. I'm going to put one jump point down near some objectives. You're going to go, okay, interesting. I'm going to put my jump point right next to it, or I'm going to put my jump point over by the other cluster of objectives. And now there's a question being asked, okay, am I going to go heavy on this side, or am I going to let you take that side, or am I going to try and split my forces and go in kind of both clusters of objectives? And so the game is supposed to unfold really fluidly because you're basically placing units kind of anywhere on the battlefield. I feel like last time we spoke, I sort of talked a bit about how much I was inspired by Malifaux, and there's an element of it of inspiration from Malifaux with this deployment mechanic, which is in one version of the game. I haven't played the most recent edition, so I don't know if it's still there. You flip cards out to find out how you deploy, like what the deployment setup is, and if you flip a joker, you get a crazy mixed up blind deployment where everybody just throws cards down on the table and then you flip them all over and you have to deploy like sort of scattered all over the table. It's awesome. Every game I've played with blind deployment in Malifaux has always been a hoot. So I kind of wanted to sort of create some of that chaos and say, okay, what if the game is so chaotic and space is so three-dimensional that there's no such thing as deployment zones? Like, just everything's a melee right from the very first activation of the turn of the game.
That's pretty awesome, actually, and very, like, so it's, that's pretty cool. And having, you know, somebody, I'm excited to actually play Malifaux, and we were talking about that kind of before this happened, but we had, you know, kind of talked about the unique game types and how you'd kind of gotten inspired, so that's really awesome. So I noticed here that there's no set of factions, too. Like, so you don't have a faction, and you just kind of design your own.
Yeah, that's right. So that was actually like it's an Offspray blue book. So a couple of things are true. One is it has to be quite short. Another is it probably doesn't have that much background setting in it because you want to give the players a reasonable amount of latitude, and that's true of this as well. And the other is that because it's short and there's not much setting, it doesn't make a huge amount. There's not a huge amount of space for cramming in like extended army lists and so on. But more than anything, Phil Smith at Offspray, who commissioned it from me, he sort of threw down a gauntlet and said, you know what would be really cool with a game like this is if it had a design your own faction system, which I sort of rolled my eyes at because I'd been just come out of the experience of designing the faction system for Gaslands, where I realized why faction systems exist in games. And it's because, you know, you want to provide really awesome options, but you want to make sure that those options are locked off so that not everybody has access. If everybody has access to everything, then the most cool stuff will eventually just end up being gravitated towards by players, and you'll end up with quite a samey set of stuff. So the idea of a build your own faction system was kind of sounded ludicrous and kind of like a fun design challenge. So yeah, so that's something that I've put into the game through sheer bloody mindedness of not turning down a challenge. And so how it works is essentially a tech tree system where you begin with a couple of reasonably minor special rules that you can add, and there are six of these tech trees, and the first kind of, they're called competitive advantages for a reason that will become clear as we discuss the setting, but the first competitive advantage you buy will unlock a selection of the tech tree, and then as you work your way through a particular branch of the tech tree, some other like cross branches to other tech tree branches will become available. So you can build the different tech trees are things like military, aggression, endurance, logistics, and so you can get kind of different fleet special rules that push your fleet in a different direction. But there's no factions. You kind of mix and match that stuff within some constraints.
Then that's pretty cool. I know that looking at it, you can have kind of these. You could probably make some pretty goofy stuff too if you want to be that comedic option, which is, you know, what I'll be doing most of the time. So just to, is there an option for me to just load myself up for bear and crash my ship into other ships? Because that's all I'm going to do.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. We got you covered. That one's called aggression. And because I wrote this game, there's an explosion mechanic. So when ships die, you roll a dice because things need to explode. In aggression, one of the early perks is that you can explode more dramatically and indeed explode on will.
Nice. Yeah, because that's exactly kind of the play type that we're trying to do. Well, that sounds pretty cool. What other, you know, let me kind of... There's a lot. Like, I'm looking at it, and then, you know, looking at your pre-order, it's coming out pretty soon here. So I'm just trying to, like, I read about this, you know, before we got started, and it seems really cool and very, you know, the thing I like about a lot of your games is that you don't have to. You're not bound by a specific archetype of like how the story progresses. You're kind of responsible for your own story. And you can just kind of use the rubrics you want to use, and then you just kind of throw yourself into the fray. And, you know, part of that is what draws me to Gaslands. So I'm actually very excited for that aspect of it here, where it's very, you know, soup to nuts. This is the game. Throw it on the table. But one thing that actually is incredibly interesting is the use of multiple tables. So everybody hears that, I think, and goes, what? Like, what's up with that? So...
What is up with that? Why did we do that? It was such a bananas idea. So, one of my best buddies, Glenn, he suggested this idea originally, and I think it was once we played a few games with the jump points and the fact that you could bring ships in anywhere you liked. And then we introduced a rule where you could hop between jump points, which seemed kind of neat. So you could kind of redeploy across the battlefield really, you know, the jump points were like portals that you could teleport through. And at that point, he was like, wait a minute, can't we just, and points to like a coffee table nearby, like, can't I just deploy some stuff over there? Why not? And I had a little think about it for a couple of days and tried writing the rules, and the rules ended up being incredibly simple. And I put them down on paper, and I was like, well, this is either going to be a gimmick and be kind of like, it'll function, but it won't do anything, or it might be awesome. And it turns out, like, a lot of the things that were exciting about the game, tactically and narratively, about, like, you know, being able to jump into a system and surprise people, and, you know, the game is about kind of capturing objectives and getting jobs done and defending the little guys whilst they get their jobs done. All of these things that were interesting about the game just became even more interesting when there were three tables on like different surfaces that were kind of representing different physical systems. And it just felt like such a science fiction-y thing to do that, like, I guess it's probably been done from time to time in slightly wackier kind of Warhammer tournaments or what have you. But the fact that the game makes it a central part of the game and says, no, you, like, if you draw the objectives and the objective says you have to add a second or a third or a fourth table, like, that's the rules. You have to add a second or a third or a fourth table, and you just have to deal with that. I found really exciting and ludicrous, and actually works great and makes the game loads better. And it is much easier to play across multiple tables than you're thinking. I am not some like game design lord sitting in my wargaming castle where I have multiple rooms filled with game tables. All you do is you just get some masking tape and, like, you know, tape off two areas of your game table, or if, like me, your game table is built with 2-foot by 4-foot sections, just like pull those sections apart by an inch so that they represent separate tables. Or like in my playtesting room here, I've got a whiteboard with a space mat draped over my printer, and then I've got my little wargaming table split up with tape. So yeah, multiple tables. Why has no one done that before?
I mean, I don't know. You're forging you're a trailblazer, you know. So we're just but you know what? Like, yeah, it's interesting. So like that's kind of an interesting thing, because, you know, for me personally, some of the game in there is an aspect of immersion where it's like, okay, so your fleet's here, and then now another enemy fleet just jumped into another location. What are you going to do? Right? And prioritizing where you're going and what you're doing. That seems pretty cool.
The other thing is that when you are beginning designing a spaceship game, at some point the idea occurs to you, should this be in three dimensions? Space is really three dimensional. This should probably be in three dimensions. And different games have ignored or tackled that in different ways. I actually really like the way that Drop Fleet Commander handles like different atmospheric levels. So you've got three atmospheric levels and you've got little pegs on your base of your ship, and it goes to tell you whether you're up or down. And there's other ways of handling this. But what's weird is that when you play across multiple tables and the tables are connected by jump points and you can jump between those jump points, sometimes if you're paying scant attention to one of the tables, you might make a tactical decision, not realizing that actually the other guy can just scoot their ship over from one table to that table's jump point and then appear right in the middle of all that shit you were trying to do and completely baffle you. And the moment that you don't see that coming and somebody plays it on you, you're like, damn you, that was some kind of three-dimensional chess bullshit you pulled on me that I totally should have seen. And it does feel like, you know, like those theoretical games of chess where you've got three chess boards, one on top of the other. Like, it kind of works like that. It's almost three-dimensional, but in a slightly, you know, not in the obvious way that you would imagine ships go up and ships go down.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty wild, especially like Void Warfare in general. You know, sometimes, you know, looking at the rules and everything, it's like, if you just can you, so that's the question though, can you move up and down between these tables? Like, is that an activation? Kind of, how's that work? And if that's getting into something you want to save for the rules, that's fine.
No, not at all. Did you just say Void Warfare?
Yeah.
I am totally going to write a contract set where you're actually in sort of hyperspace. That hadn't occurred to me that there was some bizarro land that you could be spaceship battling that would be whilst you were in transit. I'm totally going to try and write that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're chasing me and I'm shooting at you and we're both traveling in the same kind of I don't know. You know how you like watch a sci-fi movie and like
they
and they're like trace their, you know, their jump point and find out where they went. It's like, so it stands to reason that you're probably following the exact same path that they just followed. I can't imagine that you would follow a different one. So then they're just following you. Like, obviously, if you're
maybe
both
I'm
moving,
like
there's gotta be something going on there. I mean, that second Star Trek movie with Chris Pine, where the bigger Star Trek, you know, the whatever the ship was called that Khan took over, could fly faster than the other ship could. So, you know, it's like, if it's a, I don't know, man. Like, you're the game designer. I'm just the podcaster. I don't know.
It feels like there'd be some kind of, maybe I accidentally turned it into some kind of Gaslands thing where there's like a rolling road, but it's the depths of irreality. What the hell are we talking about? That was good. What was the question before that?
Yeah, the question was just multiple tables and kind of how we move between spaces, and then we just came up with a new way to do that. So
mechanically, it's super, super simple. So if there's a thing called, hang on, let me back up two steps. So the way that you have spaceships in A Billion Suns is every spaceship has a class. So I provide a table of sort of basic spaceship chassis classes, which kind of, you know, somewhat reminiscent of the way that I did it in Gaslands, where, you know, you just got different vehicle types. So you get a sort of a la carte menu of ship classes. So they might, you know, they start really small, like wings of fighters and bombers. Then you've got gunships and corvettes and frigates and, you know, destroyers, and up at the biggest end you've got your cruisers and your battleships. So you each of those ship classes has got a stat line. And one of the stats is a stat called mass, which is a sort of rough. It's a rough indication of the general size class of that ship class. So bomber wings will have a mass of 0. Battleships, which are the biggest, will have a mass of 3. And that controls a bunch of different. That mass stat controls a bunch of different rules interactions, one of which is jump range. So when you've got a jump point, which is just a token or a gaming gem that you've thrown on the tabletop, things can deploy in jump range from that jump point. And jump range is 6 inches minus your mass. So fighters can deploy further from the jump point than battleships. The way that jump hopping works is super simple. If you happen to start or end your movement, your battle group's movement phase in jump range of the jump point, then you can hop. So I can either start near a jump point, hop first onto another table and then scoot off, or I can tear it back to my jump point on one table and then appear on another table. Haha, you know, next to some objectives or next to some battle groups that are planning to move or what have you. Pretty simple stuff. And that's actually quite illustrative of the movement in general in A Billion Suns. So for a spaceship game, it actually has a really simplistic movement system, because a lot of these kind of fleet level games, there's a tendency to create quite, not intricate, but like movement systems that are quite precise and are trying to replicate the fact that these are like lumbering vessels that turn very slowly. And again, back to that kind of naval feel. What I'm trying to get done with A Billion Suns is that sensation of being like a general in a war room, just like with a croupier's shovel pushing wooden ships around to try and replicate the battlefield. So the movement in A Billion Suns is pretty fluid. When you move a battle group, you just pivot it up to any amount that you like and then push it straight forward up to its thrust. And if you pivot more than 90 degrees, then you can't fire your main weapon. So there is a question being asked about whether you're positioned correctly. But movement is quite fast and fluid. So activations are intended to be relatively quick, because I did want it to be a game that scales to quite a lot of miniatures on the table.
So how do you kind of designate the scale size? Like, there's point systems in other games. How are you? And so I see scale 3 and then scale 8. Kind of what determines a scale for you?
Yeah. So I guess I'll have to back up one level. So one of the slightly weird things about A Billion Suns is that it doesn't have, it doesn't ask you to create a fleet list in advance of the battle. So just like there's no deployment phase, one of the reasons that there's no deployment phase is that you also don't start with any ships And this this idea I was kind of intoxicated with from the beginning, where you choose to buy and bring in ships as the tactical situation emerges, which is kind of like, it's kind of like a real-time strategy video game idea more than it is a tabletop war game idea. And so in this game, you have a single tracker, which is both your kind of army points and your victory points. They're the same currency. And so you start with no money, no credits, which is what it's called, and you have to buy ships, and that will essentially send you into negative credits. So you start in debt on turn one. And the reason that you're buying ships to put them on the table is because you've got to get jobs done, which are described by the contracts, and you're going to choose three contracts. And as you complete contracts, as you sort of capture objectives or save lifeboats or find pirates and hunt them down, then you start to earn money. And the more money you earn, the closer you are going to get back into being in the black and maybe to, you know, make a serious profit. And as you start making money, then you've got money in your wallet. Like, okay, maybe I could deploy some more ships in turn two or turn three, but that's going to burn the same victory points that were going to win me the game. So I've got a bit of a tension there. So the question that was a fun and difficult thing to make work, but the question that it asks is, if you and me want to play a game of Billion Suns and we want to play like an sort of 45 minute or an hour game, or we sort of would like to play a bigger game and we fancy playing for more like 2.5 hours because we want to play something a bigger, like, if we don't have army lists, like, we can't really say, hey, should we play a 3,000 point game or a 700 point game? Like, it doesn't really work. So I could start deploying loads of ships and slow the game down from where you were planning to, because I've suddenly got a crap load of stuff on the table and you were planning to just put three ships down and then we were going to go and have lunch. So the scale of the game is the sort of, it's a controlling number that at the beginning of the game we say, all right, we're going to play a scale 3 game, which is really small, or a scale 5 game, which is kind of in the medium, or a scale 10 game, which is like a mega mass battle game. And broadly, it controls a bunch of different parts of the mechanics, but it sort of controls how many objectives go down. So you can kind of think about it as, if we play a scale 5 game, then there's going to be 5 asteroids and 5 space stations and 5 space kraken are going to appear. And it also controls how many cards are in the victory point deck. So each contract has a thing called a contract deck, which is just like a stack of cards, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in that suit. If we're playing scale 5, there's going to be 5 cards, and that means that there's that many, all add all those numbers together, there's that many kind of victory points available. So the scale is essentially how you determine how much of a game, how big of a game of the Billion Suns you want to have.
Nice. So it just kind of, like, if it's like, I just want to play a really big, huge game of Billion Suns, it's like, I'm going to pick the highest scale I can possibly have, and if I just want to show somebody the game, I can play it at scale 1.
Yeah, pretty much. So I recommend the first game that people ever play, like, play at scale 3, because it, you know, there's enough things to do to get the flavor of the game, but it's not overwhelming. And also, because there's not that much revenue on the table, there's not that much money to be earned from the contracts. Like, if you total up all the money that you could possibly make in that game, it isn't enough to justify putting down big hairy ships like carriers and cruisers and battleships. So the game naturally feels like a smaller game, because it's just sort of smaller ships kind of tootling around doing their thing. Whereas if you play a scale 10 game, then there's a lot more money on the table. And so if I deploy 3 or 4 battleships, like, I can still make enough money from the various objectives and contracts to justify that expense. And having put that stuff down, now you've got to decide, am I going to bet equally as heavy and try and go toe-to-toe, or am I going to bet way under and try and sneak around and get some of this stuff done and kind of vastly undercut you? So I might not, maybe I won't make as much, but I also won't spend anything like as much. And so you have like a different way of approaching the game, kind of depending on what your opponent decides to do. And then you can you can kind of you can match that, or you can play cautious and go under it.
Awesome. I'm blanking it. So where did this desire to make a space combat game come from? Like, what kind of brought you about to say, you know what, man, I'm going to, besides the gauntlet being dropped on you, like,
There are at least three reasons why I really wanted to make a space game. One is one of my first ever games that I ever wrote when I was about 10 or 11 was a game that was imaginatively titled Space Fleet, which would have been an IP infringement for sure. Which was back when I was first into GW games, which was like 94, 95. Games Workshop used to put a lot of rules they still do, but they put a lot of rules into the White Dwarf mag. And for example, I never had enough pocket money saved up to indulge in a copy of Manowar, but I pretty much knew, or I figured I knew how Manowar worked from reading all the expansions that got printed in White Dwarf. And so I'd written this space game where I still have it in a ring-bound folder, actually, in my office here. I've got pages and pages of these like ship outlines, and each ship outline is stuffed full of like locations with save values on them, which have little names like engine room and troop barracks and control bridge and stuff. And so I don't really remember, but I presume we must have played this game because there's quite a lot of rules written for it. So it was like a space game where we must have had some space fleet miniatures, which, you know, proto Battlefleet Gothic, and when you bump into each other, then you invade each other, and there's like a extremely extended troop boarding action stuff, which makes sense when you have an entire summer to play a game of something because you're 11. So there's that, and then there was the fact that, like, I don't know, like a bunch of new Star Wars movies came out, and I was super super excited for capsule ship combat. And if I'm completely honest, I was really really excited by the miniatures for Star Wars Armada, and I bought like a kind of clump of ships thinking, ooh, I can have that like giant space battle experience that I really want. And then I got the game on the table, and I was really disappointed about how slow and detailed it was, and how it actually felt like a really small scale skirmish game, which just happened to have capital ships. And if you actually try and play Armada with like five Star Destroyers and like 12 Corvette type size things, like, it's an incredibly sluggish game that doesn't really want you to play it in that way. And so I realized that I had a bunch of miniatures that I didn't have a suitable rule system for. So, you know, crack on.
Well, I mean, yeah, man, like, it's actually really funny. I was having this conversation with George the other day, and I had picked up a box of Star Wars Legion. And, you know, we were talking about kind of how Legion's interesting in the sense that it's like, we were playing Crisis Protocol over the break, and we had such a great time because it was so simple. You know, it was like, just, you know, play some superheroes and pick up that dumpster and throw it at Iron Man and punch, you know, Red Skull in the face. It's just, it's simple. It's easy. There's no kind of, it's not like a huge min-max meta chasing game, right? So that's kind of why we like Legion. But we thought what was cool about Legion was that, you know, there was an Armada and X-Wing component to it. So you could play, like, and we had kind of had this vast idea to kind of take on, like, well, what if we played, you know, Battlefleet, like, this is specifically for Warhammer, but what if we played Battlefleet Gothic in the, to do the space warfare? And then we did... Mm-hmm. Like Adeptus Titanicus to do giant mass scale battles, and then you did, you know, Crusade for the smaller battles, you know, and kind of what would happen if you were fighting over a system in a huge scale and like playing in these Crusade games? Like, if you won the battle in space, when you fought on the ground, you know, it would have an effect. Like, you can't deep strike or like drop anything from your ship because voids, like, space superiority is, you know, the other faction. So they would just shoot whatever you tried to drop. So it's really cool that a billion suns, I'm sorry, a thousand suns, billion suns, the Warhammer building those, making those connections.
I know. I realized that afterwards, but like, honestly, naming this game was such a pain in the pee hole. Like, all of the good science fiction names are already taken.
I know. And it's so hard because like anybody with a, you know, $5 in a domain registrar can like create a site for a game, and all of a sudden you're out because they created it first. But you know, it's really, I'm actually very excited about this because you know, we have Joseph Stargrave coming out, Joseph McCullough, and he's creating Stargrave, and George and I are very narrative grand scale people, so I think it's not going to be a hard sell for me to get him in on this game, because it's going to be like, George, let's play, you know, Billion Suns, and that can be like our space faction, right? And then we have Stargrave, and that's when like we're down on the ground. And it'd be kind of funny to like play some pirates that are trying to run around stealing stuff from one another. So it's like really cool that you guys are having these kind of science fiction kicks. I totally dig it. It's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's somewhere buried in the Forge World 40K books. There's because I remember hearing about it and fishing out a copy of this book from somewhere. There's a beautiful like 4-page campaign system in one of the Forge World books that gives an idea of, I can't remember the specific mechanics, but it's basically like each game that you play gives you some kind of like campaign score or some kind of resource that you can then use to tweak your following games. And because the campaign resource is totally unlinked to what the game system is, it's just like, did you win or did you lose? Then like they suggest, oh yeah, you can play Battlefleet Gothic, and then you can play Epic, and then you can play Titanicus, and then you can play 40K or whatever. So yeah, like just come up with some kind of simple sort of, you know, playing it forward system where it doesn't matter what you play, but you know, you toss up your victories or whatnot. That's so cool.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because you found that book, but we actually had the idea for a narrative campaign that we were doing here locally. You know, obviously this is all, you know, once COVID's over and we can actually have people out to do it, but
yep.
The idea that you had with Gaslands, you had something coming out with Gaslands, and you know, we're talking about A Billion Suns, but the victory points don't really matter because you still get all the money and all the resources that you would normally get whether you won the game or not, right? So right. You just kind of like, you get those victory points and they're completely arbitrary to the actual, you know, so that somebody doesn't get creeped out of, or power creeped out of basically their own game. So that's really cool, man. And, you know, Thousand Suns is like something I'm definitely looking forward to putting on the table. I just have to look through all these different options because you've turned me on to so many different places to track down starship meetings that I didn't even know existed.
So, yeah, we should talk about that for a moment. So,
Because
this is a little paperback rulebook, so the game is just, you know, all I'm selling you is the rulebook. It's really important that the game not give a hoot about what miniatures you use or indeed what bases they're based on. So if you've got any spaceship miniature based on any spaceship base, it's going to be fine. And the reason for that is that all measurement is made from the center of the model, which for spaceships really means the flight peg. Or in my case, the steel nail that you've magnetized your ships to stick to. And then if ships end up overlapping their bases, that's totally fine. And the rules permit that as long as the models aren't falling over, it's totally fine. So ships can, you can acquire spaceships from basically any of like a million great locations. And so there's a ton of miniature manufacturers or sources or other games listed on the Billion Suns website, which if people want to check it out, it's got the rather rad URL abillionsuns.space, because apparently that's a domain name now.
I know, I'm on it right now, and there's a lot of different ones. There's like .game, there's .space, all sorts
of things. So a billion suns, all of the letters, not any numbers, abillionsuns.space. And so you can read about some of the unique features of the game that we've been talking about, and read my design blog to see how many times the game broke during playtest, because this was a bit of a bastard to write. There were genuinely points during A Billion Suns development where it was an unpleasant game to play that no one actually wanted to playtest anymore because they were like, we're fed up of playing this horrible game where all of the math is complicated and all of the tactical decisions are incredibly difficult. And this is just like the most Grognardian game ever written. But it made it through the darkness and it is much more lighthearted and fast playing and fun now. But yeah. Oh, there were some times with this design.
I see that you also have a Facebook group.
There's A Billion Suns. Just search for A Billion Suns on Facebook. And it's closed. We can all show our spaceships in quiet consultation with each other, but it's open to everyone.
And you also, so I was on TTS the other day playing and saw that you had A Billion Suns there too, so you have it on TTS now.
Yeah, I've you know, for the same reason of you, majority of my gaming's been on TTS for the last year. So once you get the hang of TTS, it turns out that making mods for games is pretty simple. So I kind of got into it, and making sure that there's good quality TTS mods for all of my games. I'm really missing playing face-to-face war games right now, because we're just in the depths of as we're speaking now, we're in the depths of a lockdown in the UK. So it's been a long, long time since I've had a chance to actually push minis around on the table with someone, and I'm hurting for it. It's like, I don't mind playing board games on TTS, but for me, miniature games, it kind of loses some of the soul, some of the reason that I do it.
Yeah, and that's very true. And you guys are in our thoughts out here in Florida when we think about, you know, you and Joseph and everybody else. We have friends, you know, I've got friends in the Goonhammer community and a few other communities that, you know, they're living out there right now, and you guys are all under lockdown. We are thinking about you, you know, and it's hard, I know. And I, you know, the United States here, we just came out of a 4-year fever dream, so you know. we're just now waking up, so it's just,
hey, you're allowed to talk about science again.
We're allowed to talk about, you know, the fact that we don't have a giant orange Cheeto as a president, which is really exciting. But
on that previous point though, like I gotta tell you, like, launching A Billion Suns, like, would have been like, it was supposed to come out February last year, which would have been kind of crummy because it would have been launched just as the UK was going into lockdown, and so it probably would have crashed and burned. It's still not an awesome time to launch a new tabletop game, but that's when we're launching it, because that's when the book comes out. So one of the things that I like made 100% sure is that there is a free to download solo play mode available for Billion Suns, and I spent a lot of time trying to get this solo play mode right. So because the game itself is kind of, like I said, it's a bit like a real-time strategy game, like, you, there are elements of sort of bringing units in, capturing locations, getting jobs done, defending the kind of workers and protecting them with bigger ships. It does actually work quite nicely as a solo game, and the solo rules that you can download from abilliansuns.space in PDF form are really quite similar to playing the multiplayer game. It's just that you're trying to get the contracts done, you're trying to complete the missions, and the game will sort of throw pirates and frustrations at you to try and get in your way and steal the victory points before you do. So there's a pressure and a clock being put on you by the game, but you're still basically playing A Billion Suns. There's not really a lot of change to the core mechanics of the game at all. So if you get good at playing the solo mode, you will be better at Billion Suns when you come to play multiplayer games. And one feature of the game, which I'm really proud of, is that this is a 2-4 player game. It's not just a head-to-head game, which was one of the things that I was really proud of in Gaslands, and really wanted to make sure worked in A Billion Suns as well.
That's really awesome for you to include all that stuff and put it in there. Like, and I do love that it's a 2-4 player game, because it's kind of, how do you put the there's always another person that wants to play a game like this. You know, it's always, I've never gone to a game store, played a cool game where, I mean, even like Gaslands, you know, like I'll be playing Gaslands at a store and somebody will come up and be like, hey man, what are you guys playing? And it's like, playing Gaslands. Oh, cool. Like, and then you come back next week and they're like, hey, you guys want to play Gaslands? And there's three of us. Yeah, man, come on, join the carnage, you know?
So that's really cool that you're doing that.
Because it's the first thing that, you know, you say, and the thing that's like kind of a bummer is, especially right now, and also just in general, there may not be a huge player base for players in a specific game. Like, I only know, besides the Dropouts guys on the podcast, I only know of like two other people that play Titanicus, right? Mm. So it's like cool having rules where if four people want to get together, they can play a game. And that's I love that because that's how it should be. You know, I want to have more time, more friends, more fun, and the ability to like kind of, well, the four player game, I'm assuming you can make some alliances. Like, hey, I'm not going to screw you over this turn if you help me kind of deal with what's going on over here, and the ability to kind of bring out some organic play through that, which I think is pretty awesome.
That begs the question. I hadn't really thought of it this way. I wonder if part of Gaslands' kind of adoption success, like the fact that it got big quite quickly, I wonder if that's partly because you don't have to have another pair of people. Like, as soon as one person is interested, those two people that are having a good time can introduce that third person to a good time, and then that third person has caught the virus can go off and teach two other friends. And maybe right. It's just maybe like with something like Malifaux or 40k, where it's like more strictly a 1v1 game, like somebody can peer over and be like, "Ooh, that looks like a fun time. Can I have a fun time?" And you can be like, "No, you can't have a fun time yet unless you find a friend." Right. Maybe that's just a very good thing for a sort of indie game that wants to get a player base more quickly, is to not restrict it to two players. Never thought of it that way before.
No, but I mean, think about it. Like, that's a really cool mechanic to have, because there's so many games that are only two players. It's like, you're just assuming that you have to assume that nobody else, like, the two people want to play. Like, what if three people want to play, you know, and then it becomes interesting, you know, like for a game night, you know, that's the thing I like about this Billion Suns, right? You have a couple friends over for a game night, you all play a Billion Suns. You can acquire these ships for pretty cheap, like very cheap peanuts in some of these places. Obviously, you know, Drop Zone or Drop Fleet Commander is going to be a little more expensive, but you know, it's I can get four guys to play on a night with some beer and pretzels. You know, that's going to be great, because then they're going to exactly what you just described. They're going to be like, oh man, this is actually really fun, and I'm going to spend, you know, the $20 or whatever to build my fleet, and then they're going to bring it home and somebody else starts playing it. You know, so that's really cool. And big multiplayer is always fun.
Yeah, I think so. Just, I think we were talking before, like, that's kind of that was a lot of my gaming heritage was playing multiplayer games and never really locked into the 1v1 highly tactical sort of tournament play of any game until, you know, about 6 years ago, where I really got into 1v1 Malifaux. But yeah, because it's a social hobby. It's about, you know, kicking with some friends. And I think that it's always been possible to play team games quite easily, but it's like, as a games designer, are you going to bother to write in the bits that you need to make sure that it's scalable to player count? And are you going to make it okay that if there are three players, it's going to actually work? Because honestly, I hadn't realized what a pickle writing for more than two players was until I tried to write Mystic Skies for Blaster Volume 2, which we talked about before. I tried to write Mystic Skies as a 2-4 player game straight off the bat, and didn't have very long to write it, and it was an absolute sod to make work as a four player game. Like, it was just horrible. Like, every rule that I would write would work beautifully when there were two players antagonizing over a single set of objectives, and as soon as I introduced a third or a fourth player, it would just fall to pieces. And the same was somewhat true of A Billion Suns. Like, there were, I sort of mentioned earlier that it was absolutely horrible to play at certain points. There were moments during the playtesting where if two players were playing in a particular way, like one person was playing really heavy and was like putting down massive battle groups of heavy ships and you know, really swinging their dick around, and the other person bet really light and brought in like a bunch of little bits and was like, okay, I'm just going to sneak around, I'm going to grab these objectives, I'm going to get out, I'm not going to even be here when you see, then the third player was left in the middle just going, bugger, I can't overbid the guy that's brought in all the battleships, and I can't underbid the guy that's brought in the small stuff, like I'm just screwed, like there's no way of me getting out of the situation. So working around those kinds of design problems ended up being quite a lot of work. So I might have lucked out with Gaslands in, like, I was just like, oh, well, I'm just going to write a game which supports any number of players, and that's just a thing. I just won't even worry about it. But as I've tried to do that multiple times since, it turns out that there are reasons why many war games are two players, because it's just considerably easier to write, particularly objectives and scenarios, when there's only two players.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just, I think it's, you know, it's a lot of work. That's definitely true, but I think it's gonna pay off for you. I'm super excited about this game, and I'm very excited.
I hope so. I'm really excited to see how it lands with people, because it's kind like I've sort of discussed a bunch of the reasons why it's bananas. There are other reasons I'm sure why it's bananas as well, but it's kind of a bananas game, and I think it might be a little bit chalk and cheese. Like, some people will look at it and just go, well, this is weird, this is not what I was expecting or what I want. And there are other people that just be like, oh, cool, this does a bunch of things that I wasn't expecting and I love, and I want to tell the kind of stories that this game is trying to tell on the table. So yeah, I'm hopeful for it, but it's interesting because the way that you deploy ships as the game unfolds sort of begs a new social contract at the table. Like, I don't know. Like, one of the things that people complained about during playtesting was, if you deploy a bunch of big ships, you can basically spend yourself deeply into debt, and you've basically lost on the first turn because you just deployed a bunch of rubbish like an idiot. And so you can throw the game in the first turn by just endlessly deploying rubbish, and then there's no point in playing the game because, well, there's no way you can make that money back. Like, you've already lost. There's no victory point way of you winning. And as I was considering these complaints from the playtesters, I was thinking, well, I can play any war game like an absolute moron and throw the game and there not be any game there. It's just that we kind of know what the social contract is. Like, don't deploy all of your units like off the board and then walk them into a pit so that they all die. Like, just don't do that. But because Billion Suns is doing a bunch of new things, I don't think people will instantly know or intuit what that social contract is. And so there may be, I'm worried that there might be a few bad play experiences initially as people try and figure out, like, how the hell does this thing even work? And what happens if I push these levers too far and they'll have bad games with their opponents? And I worry about that, but it'll be interesting to see it unfold.
I'm interested too. And I'm definitely, you know, I've actually pre-ordered it already. So we'll see kind of when I get my copy, we can actually sit down and play it.
Anyone else listening, you just get your fingers over to Amazon and pre-order that rulebook. Very inexpensive.
Yeah, and actually, you may, you know, it's inexpensive, and I think, you know, it's coming out February 18th, 2021, is that right?
That is correct. And if Amazon says it, then it's definitely true, because they have all the metadata.
They do, they know all. All right, well, I think that's it for the interview. I think we're out of time. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No.
Alrighty.
Buy the game. Try the game. Recommend it to a friend. Buy some spaceships. You can even play with tokens. Hell, why not?
Yeah, paper. Draw some planes. Well, thanks cool, for being on the show. And,
no problem.
We appreciate having you.
Yeah, all the best. And, yeah. Get those spaceships painted, man.
Yeah, I need to get them done. Thanks.